Your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Coming to you live and direct from the phantom shores of the Hudson River, my name is Ra, and I am here to awaken the dormant particles that are spiraling inside your DNA. So come with me as we go further down the mystical spiral of life. It's Spiral Radio, where each and every week we unveil the different shades of you and the different shades of me, until we all vibrate the same frequency. We have a very special guest tonight, and I've been looking to have an astrologer on for a very long time, and I went for one of the best out there, and I'm really happy to have him, and hopefully if it's one of many chats we'll have here on Spiral Radio and on my other show tomorrow night on Eye of Ra. I want to welcome to Spiral Radio Robert Phoenix. Robert, welcome, buddy.
Rob, man, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's my pleasure as well. And, you know, everybody out there, if you haven't heard of Robert Phoenix, I mean, in life, I think the best way for us to move on to this new earth that's coming and rising and this new consciousness that we need to adapt to and the spiritual work that we need to do is in this modern times. Just similar to the times that our ancestors once had, we have to find a way to become our own healers, our own shaman, our own, shaman, basically. We have to find a way to heal ourselves and to learn how to predict cycles and different things. And we all have our different ways of becoming our own shaman. And Robert has found a way to predict different life events through both astrology and numerology, both monumental events and catastrophes go in cycles, and they are ruled by the planets, the stars, numbers, everything is involved. And Robert has found a way, similar to the ancients used to, that this knowledge has been lost over time. You know, it's become secret or occult. And now, you know, there's a new age rising where people are starting to adapt these old ways and this old knowledge. And Robert, you are one of these people, and I'm so glad to have you here so we could try to figure some of what's going on this planet out.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks again for having me on. And we can see patterns, cycles, repetition through time, and we can also get a sense as to perhaps what's coming, if we can begin to see and understand certain aspects that are happening astrologically. I mean, that may sound a little arcane, but what I really want to kind of speak to is this idea that we have to become our own shamans in some ways. And I think that that's really imperative. And we, you know, when we talk about the shaman, we talk about somebody who really kind of lived on the edge in a lot of ways of existence in the tribe. I mean, in many cases, the shaman was somebody who was, you know, perhaps epileptic, had seizures, or they may have been like sort of their tribe's version of intersex, or they were cross-eyed. I mean, there was something about the shaman or the medicine person that set them apart. And usually what would happen is that somebody who was already in that kind of established position, who didn't have the same kinds of responsibilities that the rest of the tribe or the rest of the group had, would see somebody who would be born into that community, and then they would see that they would be a viable candidate to take that tradition on. And what's happened is that as we've moved through time, this idea that there would be one or two people that would be born at the fringe of that group or of that tribe because of whatever physical or spiritual malady they may have been born into, that idea has been sort of been broadcast across a large group of people. Because when we deal with the disenfranchised, or we deal with people that are out of sync with their culture, it's a very similar kind of proposition. So when we talk about that, we talk about people that are living on the edge or trying to understand the nature of reality as it exists in relation to the consensus or mainstream culture, we're talking about a planetary or shamanistic experience. Yeah. Because the group begins to cohere to that model. Now, that's one part of it. The other part of it is that, I mean, if we go back in time, we're going to be talking about 9/11. And in my estimation, we'll encounter, and I'm not an astro theologist. I do believe that Jesus walked the earth. He didn't go by the name of Jesus. I believe he went by the name of Yeshua, Sananda Manuel. And this was probably the greatest shaman of all time. And so what happened during that lifetime was that he was setting up a connection. Many things happened, but he was setting up a connection between himself and the Godhead, which was direct and in contradiction to the Sanhedrin, which were running the show at that time in the Fertile Crescent. But not only that, but he created a model where not only was he that voice and that intersection between time and space, but he was also creating a model that the human was the church, or the human was that holy space. And so that's a really important piece to understand, because he's playing a very similar role. You know, and he basically was railing against this idea that there would be a system, that there would be churchianity. And that takes place when Paul and later Peter decides to go to Rome and become the first pope. And Paul, of course, decides to start this whole idea of the church. And when Sananda Manuel is sitting there at the Last Supper and he says, "One of you will betray me," he's not talking about Judas. He's not talking about Judas. That's not the betrayal. He's talking about Paul. He's talking about Paul, formerly Saul of Tarsus, that he's the betrayer, that he's going to be the one that sets up this system that takes us out of the body and into this franchise. And then, of course, Peter plays his role as well. So I think, to your point, I mean, we're at this time where religion is dying. I mean, it is dying. Unless you're like a full-blown Zionist Christian who is, you know, basically beating your chest today, 2 days after Trump has made this announcement about the temple in Jerusalem, the numbers of organized religion are dying. And they're dying in a way where it's not that we're becoming more secular, and perhaps that's part of it, or more atheistic, and that's part of it. But what we're really trying to get at, and I think which is what your point was at the very beginning, is we're trying to get back into the essence of the cosmic relationship between us and the divine, so that we're all living in accordance with that. And whether or not we have the astrological tools or the numerological tools, that stuff is great. I mean, it's fun to play with, and we understand, and we can divine. But really, the system comes down to that expression of essence. So I think that we're in a really timely time, and all the truth and all the awakening and all the pulling down of the pants of the media and the fake news and everything that's been going on is part of the process. Now, what happens is that the gatekeepers want to steer us into the divide and conquer polarity. And that's in the realm of Gemini, which we certainly can talk about. So now it's you're either with us or against us. We're seeing kind of a new version of that with the announcement of the temple, or what will be the third temple that will be erected in East Jerusalem. So we can see this now. It's like, well, you know, there's been this cultivation of people on the conservative side, on the Trump side, and it's great.
Trump is kind of helping that happen, isn't he?
He is helping it happen. Trump is a really interesting character.
Yeah.
He's a really, I mean, if people want to, and I started following Trump as the primaries were happening. And I will say this, I think that something has happened to Trump, and that is either he's been replaced or he is being modulated. Huh. What I mean by that is that somebody has gotten into his either food or whatever he's taking, because this is not necessarily the same guy that I saw during the primaries. That guy that I saw was really cagey. He was really bright, and I was fascinated by what was going on. And so then
got dumbed down. Yeah.
He's either gotten dumbed down, meaning that somebody's gotten to his food or what he's drinking, or what we're seeing is an inferior version of Trump, which would be a clone. Right. It would be the clump. It would be the clone version of Trump. Yeah. So we're seeing one of these two things. I mean, even when he was talking about the announcement with Israel and the temple, I mean, he's slurring his words. I mean, it's really kind of weird to watch, right? But I mean, so now this becomes really interesting. So if that is, let's say, the clump version or the clone Trump, does his chart still say the same, or is it the chart of the clone? I mean, you know, this is a fascinating kind of proposition. But if we look at the natal chart for Trump, it's fascinating. He's got the Sun Uranus conjunction, true node. In Gemini as well. He's born on an eclipse, full moon in Sagittarius. And then he's got Saturn conjunct the moon. I mean, he's got a fascinating chart. And all that America, make America great stuff, you can see it in the chart. He's got three planets in Cancer. I'm sorry, his Saturn's in Cancer. He has Saturn, he has Mercury, and he has Venus, all in Cancer, and they're all in the 11th house. So Cancer is a very American kind of proposition, right? This country was theoretically incarnated on July 4th, 1776. It makes it a Cancerian country. It's about nostalgia, looking back, all those things. Make America great again. That's a Cancerian message. But he's got a fascinating chart. And he's got that 28-degree Leo rising. And the eclipse happened right on his ascendant. It's fascinating stuff, man. So essentially, Trump is playing the role of a deconstructor. That's what he's here to do. He's here to basically troll the planet and deconstruct the process that's been going on for quite a while. I mean, even if you look at like the chain of custody. So it all starts off with Reagan. When Reagan gets elected, and who's the vice president? It's George Herbert Walker Bush. And Reagan has that assassination attempt. And there are some people who believe that he was replaced after that. And whether or not he's replaced, Bush is running the government basically from that point forward. So we literally have one almost full term of Bush. And then we have the second term of Bush, which happens when he goes up for election as the Republican Party candidate. And then after that, we have two terms of Clinton. And Clinton and Bush are tied at the hip. And I mean, they're partners in crime, literally, not even figuratively. I mean, they're literally partners in crime. So we have two terms of Clinton. Then we have two terms of another Bush. And then we have Obama, who comes in, and what, for the first five and a half years, it's Obama-Clinton. So we've had this chain of custody since Reagan. And what was happening, or what was going to happen, was either going to be Hillary or was going to be Jeb. And so Trump comes along and he throws a grenade in the room.
Yeah.
And he, what he does is he breaks the chain of custody that started from literally Reagan and Bush. And that's where the chaos begins. And that's where the deconstruction process begins. And we are, and what's also really fascinating, Ra, is that the deconstruction process was started here in this country with the election and contesting the election, and it's still going on. But now it's starting to permeate and become a global process. And so whether it's North Korea, whether it's what's happening in Israel or Iran, and by the way, I don't agree with everything. I don't agree with a lot of what's happening, but I can sit back and I can observe that this is where we are, and it's needed to occur. And it is a really important stage in this process. So anyway, that's kind of where I just want to jump off.
Yeah, I mean, to go down another path with that too is along with what you do with the astrology, and I feel, you know, and it goes back in ancient times, even with my family and my ancestors, that there is a way to use star, if you want to call it a technology or a magic, there's a way to use the stars as power, as spells, you know, to use spells. And I think that it's somehow they're using a stellar force somehow to bind power within a ring or some kind of object to get their desired effect or whatever they want to accomplish. And there's a way, and I'm wondering if these politicians all have some kind of ring that they wear, a magic ring or some kind of thing, because there's a way to, you know, have the stars ascend the horoscope and have conjunction with the moon, and then you use a stone and an herb and certain ways to like bind it within a ring, and then you have a certain thing that you're evoking within the stars and everything. And I'm wondering if these politicians might be using some kind of ancient magic along with the stars and their alignments and this stellar force that you can, because, you know, the ancients as well as me believe that the stars are alive and everything is alive, and they're sort of gods of their own in a way.
Yeah.
And, you know, so maybe they're using some kind of magic as well.
Well, I mean, we could go down a really dark path if you want to. I mean, I think that it wouldn't just be a stone or an herb or a ring. But what if it's a, you know, a 4-month-old baby?
Oh, yeah, right? No, for sure. There's blood sacrifice.
Absolutely.
And I think that's, well, to go down a whole other thing, and I think that's the whole reason why we're even in the Middle East, is because these ancient giants or Nephilim or these ancient beings that they talk about in Genesis 6 and then elaborate in the Book of Enoch, and some say it was corrupted by Gnostic writings or whatever you want to believe, they were there. The Nephilim, I believe, were there. The bones were there. Everything was there. You know, but I think that they get pulled into this dimension through blood sacrifice, through incantations and rituals. They are lured from the DNA, from the blood. That's how they get pulled into this plane of existence. And I feel that that's what's going on. This the huge secret of all is there's some sort of a huge war over this DNA and bring it back into this dimension or into this realm. And, you know, I don't have all the answers, but I feel that's kind of what's going on, is that's the real reason that we're in the cradle of civilization over there, is because there's some ancient technologies, you know, that they're battling over, or some kind of something over there.
Well, it's got to be a huge portal, right? I mean,
yeah,
there's
Stargate,
gotta be,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so why are we in Yemen? What's happening in Yemen? Why are the Saudis going after Yemen? Is it because the Saudis have run out of oil? That's quite possible. And Yemen is sitting on top of reserves, which is quite possible as well. Or are there esoteric components?
Yeah. Well, I think it's the esoteric, right? But while they're there, they're going to seize the poppy fields and whatever natural resources, oil, whatever they can get while they're there as well, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally. Exactly. If you go back to the time of Queen Elizabeth I, And she had a court astrologer by the name of John Dee. And John Dee was a really interesting character. He was a mathematician. He was a map maker. And one of the things that that Elizabeth consulted Dee on a number of occasions was when to engage the Spaniards. Now, the Spaniards attacked the English four times during the reign of Queen Elizabeth I. And each time they lost soundly. And I think three out of the four times there were unusual meteorological conditions at sea, which really scuttled the Spaniards' chances. So what did Dee know? When did he signal when it was time to retaliate or, you know, mount the ships? So she was getting very, very, very clear astrological advice. Now, Dee winds up hooking up with Edward Kelly.
Yeah.
And Edward Kelly is like John Dee on steroids. And Kelly is he's not just a mathematician and a map maker and an astrologer. Edward Kelly's a summoner. So between Kelly and Dee, they've begun to embark in Enochian magic. So perhaps from the Western tradition, this is where we see the intersection between astrology and the circle and Enochian magic, which is the summoning of lesser beings. And of course, what happens with that summoning is that, you know, I mean, some people, I'm sure your audience is very hip to this, but it's not that hard to bring a lesser being into this realm.
No.
It's just,
especially if you believe in it.
it's not that hard at all. And so then what you do is you want to, you know, as long as you stay in your circle, then you dialogue with the lesser being. But most of these lesser beings are generally liars. And so you have to ask them and catch them in questions with lies. But then what happens is that you begin to figure out that you can upgrade the lesser being package. And the way that you upgrade the package is by offering up sacrifice. So you would get more knowledge, more information, more power. But as you begin that upgrade process, the sacrifice gets higher and higher and greater and greater. So now we're into this whole kind of group events of sacrifice where there's a number of people and they're participating and their emotion is involved. And there is generally these events that happen during the equinoctial or solstice events. And there can also be astrological events. The Super Bowl is probably another kind of great aspect or great event where there are things going on at that time, because there's a level of attention and theoretically dark intention that's taking place. So if we go back, if we go back to Kelly and Dee, you know, we find the Western tradition of exactly what you're talking about in a kind of a dark way,
To add to that as well, Robert, you know, I had an image one time, a vision, and I was asking before I went to sleep at night to get a message, and I was like doing heavy research on the Black Stone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, typically, you know, the one that Dee had, I was also interested in the Kaaba,
the Chintamani.
This Black Stone. And I was getting an image of the head of the bull with the one red eye and this black goo coming out of it. And I've talked about it before. Right. And it was like oozing out of so I was thinking that was the message, that it was from Aldebaran. And, you know, it was the Taurus, the head of the bull with the one red eye. And, you know, maybe some kind of meteorite or some kind of stone from this Aldebaran system is this black stone that has like magical properties, if you want to say, or some kind of technology that it seems like magic to us, you know. Who knows? I mean, in the ancient times, they called the star the Eye of God. It was like one of the main four guardian stars, and they used a talisman like bearing a ruby, and would put the inscription of Aldebaran seal, which is the X with an empty circle at each end of the X. And they would anoint it with the juice of the milky thistle, and it would be blessed in the name of Azrael, which is one of these these angels, he was calling them, angels, but basically they're like Goetia demons or whatever you want to call them.
That's right, yeah.
And they would put it under the constellation of Taurus. And mm-hmm. it was used as protection against black magic and to bind other magicians and things like this. So I'm thinking that this Aldebaran might be the source of some of these meteorites that are worshipped.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you're talking about the Chintamani stone, which is alleged to be inside of the Kaaba in Mecca. Yeah, that's really fascinating stuff. You know, and we're coming into a sort of really powerful astrological time this coming year. 2018, well, actually, it's going to be 2017 on the 22nd of December, which is not that far away, 13 days away. That's going to be the winter solstice. And on the winter solstice, Saturn is going to be in the sign of Capricorn. It's moving from Sagittarius. We're in the final degrees of Sagittarius, and it's going into Capricorn on the night of the winter solstice. The last time this has happened has been a few centuries ago. I mean, it's been a long time since we've seen Saturn and Capricorn come in and right there on the winter solstice. This is a really uncommon event we're staring down. I mean, it's like, you know, 0.1% that this happens. So this is significant. That's the first event. Number two, we have Uranus going into Taurus on May 15th, which is in the month of Taurus. And this is a really significant deal, because when Uranus goes into Taurus, we're going to experience, well, it's all that bull culture, right? It's all that the stuff that we associate with Taurus and Babel and Babylon and yep. you know, all the bull symbolism is going to start
slaying the bull. Yep.
It's going to go through the freaking roof. It's going to be everywhere. You're going to see it in media. It's this cult of Minos. It's going to be returning during Uranus in Taurus. And this is a big deal for money. It's a big deal for anything that's mechanized. So this is a really – now, it'll be in Taurus for most of 2018, most of 2018. Then it goes back into Aries. So we're going to have about a three and a half month phase where Uranus goes back for a little spell. Then it goes into Taurus, and we'll have Uranus and Taurus for 7 years. And it's a pretty significant time. So not only that, but we have Chiron going into Aries, which is the wound of man. So we have Saturn in Capricorn in its own sign coming online. We have Uranus, which is technology, radical shift, radical change, in the sign of Taurus, the bull, which is all going to be about money and resources and all that bull symbolism. And then Chiron and Aries. Not only that, but we also have some pretty significant action with Mars in 2018. It'll be between two signs for 6 months out of the year, Capricorn and Aquarius. And during part of that phase, Mars is going to be conjunct Saturn, sort of a Mars-Saturn conjunction in Capricorn. And if you think the pressure is hot now, just wait till 2018. You haven't seen anything yet.
I agree. And if you just joined us, everybody, we are with Robert Phoenix, and you can find him at robertphoenix.com. And we got like 30 seconds to break, Robert, so we'll get into more after the break. But yeah, it's funny that you were saying that with Babel and Babylon and even Baal and Baal and Bel.
That's right.
This word is about ownership and mortgages and contracts. And I think when this age ends, it's going to be the end of owning things, the end of mortgages, the end of contracts. It's going to be a whole new way of living.
Absolutely.
We'll be back after this. This song coming up is called Kandahar by Far Radio Clouds. You can find me at the Mystical Spiral robertphoenix.com. And once again, you can find our special guest tonight, Robert Phoenix, at robertphoenix.com. You could also find him on Facebook and at YouTube at the 11th House. Kandahar is up now. We'll be back after this. Spiral out.
For making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para X.
And we are back. That song was called Kandahar by Far Radio Clouds, and you can find all the music by either me or Ricky Rodriguez at Far Radio Clouds on Reverb Nation or SoundCloud or Spotify or Analog Driver or Bring the Dawn. Those three bands you could research. You could find all the music that we play here on Spiral Radio. And you can find our guest tonight, Robert Phoenix, at therobertphoenix.com. And you can find this show tonight at themysticalspiral.com later tonight. And yeah, Robert, so I have a theory too. You know, we only have like about 30 minutes left, but we're going to continue our discussion tonight as well, tomorrow night as well. I had most of my, well, I had my near-death experience in 1987, and I think at that time something awakened within me, and I was able to just see certain things that I wasn't able to before. Something just opened up inside of my consciousness after that, I think, and I was aware that an energy was, a shift was coming to this planet. I felt it. I knew it. I just didn't understand it at that age, being like 10 years old at the time. And I feel from 1987 to now, this 30-year span, there was some kind of shift of consciousness or some kind of energy that came to our planet. And I feel that it was possibly hijacked in some way, or trying to be hijacked in some way, to change the energy of it, to change it to like a darker force or a darker influence. And I feel that Saturn is involved with that. And then if you take that 29, 30 years, that's a Saturn's return, right?
So yes, right.
Is there some kind of something that shifted in 1987 that can align with what my theory is?
Well, so 1987, if I'm not mistaken, that's the time of the harmonic convergence, which was set up by José Arguelles. Let's just clarify that just to make sure. But I think it's right around that time. Let's just do a quick shuffle. But we'll get into that Saturn cycle because it's a big one.
Yeah.
And we're just kind of coming out of that. So, yeah, it was August 16th, 17th, 1987.
Wow.
And that's when the harmonic convergence.
That's right when I was in Disney.
Yeah, that's a really big time. You know, I mean, a lot of interesting events and a lot of interesting things happen to people right around that time.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're in the
after the show later on off air, I'll tell you exactly what happened to me at that. It was right. It was the last week of August, the first week of September, right before school started. That's when I went to Disney, and that's where a lot of my experiences happened.
So you're coming right out of the basically the back door of the harmonic convergence. So the fascinating thing about the '80s was that the '80s were supposed to be the next '60s. And if you look at what happened during the 80s, you'll see that it's not just a harmonic convergence, but there's a planetary convergence that's taking place. It is the rebirth of the festival. And we have things like Farm Aid and Live Aid. And, you know, all these things are taking place. Of course, the harmonic convergence. And we're not really fighting any major wars during that time. And even minor wars are, you know, kind of being avoided. I mean, there's really not a lot going on during that time. I mean, we don't kick up the war machine again in a kind of a significant way until 1990, 91, which is when Saturn goes into Capricorn. Well, actually, Saturn goes into Capricorn in the end of 1988. But that's a really fascinating time. And, of course, the president at that point in time is Reagan, and soon to like seed that over the Bush. And Reagan is an Aquarian. So Reagan was theoretically supposed to oversee, through this Aquarian position as president of the United States, this kind of global awakening in a weird way. But we have to go back. We have to go back to November 22nd, 1963, which is the event that changes history. And it changes the timeline. This is what happens on 11-22-63 when JFK gets assassinated, because we were heading in a completely different vector with JFK, and then everything changes and forks off at that point in time. And George Herbert Walker Bush is a significant player in what happens then. And so then we get into this whole kind of interesting astrological wormhole with the sign of Gemini, being that we're dealing with double imagery with the 11, the 1-1, and 22, and you have the 2-2, and you have JFK, who's a Gemini, and George Herbert Walker Bush, who's kind of there and sort of being a part of this whole experience, also a Gemini, that we fork off into the two timelines, which is the Gemini experience. So we go through the 1960s, which is kind of like this alternate wormhole for history. Yeah. And so what happens after that, and this goes all the way through that period that you're talking about, which is the 80s. Now, what I think is fascinating is that perhaps what you experienced was the shadow of what was theoretically supposed to happen during that time, which was this convergence. Now, if we play this out, right, what happens at the end of Reagan, beginning of Bush, we have the fall of the wall. So yeah. Like there's no more theoretical East and West, right? We're like now all of a sudden there's this sort of moment of oneness. And even in China, right? You have China going through its own cultural revolution.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, even that was taking place. So this was a really remarkable time, and it got hijacked. That period of time got hijacked. And this is where we get into this event that happens. Let's take it back to the Middle East and Iraq and Kuwait. And we have
the first Saturn Gulf worship, War. I think. Yeah. Yeah.
We have the first Gulf War, right? And what happens during that time? We have this coalition. We had all these countries.
I mean, with Desert Storm and all of this.
Yeah, right? There's like, you know, it's like a coalition of the willing. That's what they called it. I mean, this really is the apotheosis of what was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But it happens in a dark and shadowy version of what you're talking about.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we have the New World Order speech on 9/11, right?
He literally uses those words too. He's like, oh my God.
Right. It's 911 days from that speech to 9/11. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's really interesting about that is that if you go back in time, 9/11, 91, you know, where was the moon? It was in Gemini. Where was the moon on 9/11, 2001? Gemini. Where was Saturn? Gemini. Gemini plays a huge role in this sort of occultic cosmology because Gemini represents separation and duality. It's the sign of the trickster. It is the messenger of the gods. I swear to God, you can just go through movies, you can go through literature, you can go through esoterica, and this Gemini program is running through it the whole time. Because the whole idea is to create separation and duality, and out of order we have chaos. So the lords of separation and duality can come in and then resolve the situation, right? And on the other side of this, what do we have? We've got the galactic center, which is in the sign of Sagittarius, Sagittarius 26, which is wholeness, which is kind of the complete cosmology. And it's the galactic center. It's where the entire universe theoretically moves around this black hole. So you have these two poles of Gemini and Sagittarius. And even if you look at the United States chart, which I use the chart where Sagittarius is on the ascendant, and some people use Scorpio, some people believe it's Gemini. I believe it's Sagittarius rising, and even in the United States chart, you have Sagittarius rising and Gemini on the descendant. So we're in this really interesting kind of esoteric program where just when we're about to move something or about to shift something, something bifurcates and breaks off. You go back to 9/11, and you know it had been a while since we had gone through that vector with Kennedy on 11/22. People are starting to wake up. There's an awakening taking place. If you go back pre 9/11, you're back in the late 90s, people are starting to have their consciousness switched on. There was a lot of anti-patriot stuff. You know, we had Oklahoma City, we had Waco, Randy Weaver. I mean, there was a lot happening. People's consciousness was coming online. And of course, 9/11 shuts it down again. So this is a really I think it's interesting. I think you can really begin to look at this process of duality, which is in a lot of ways also a process of magic, whether it's light or dark, because both are incorporated in the duality. And it plays a huge role. So what you experienced was organic and real, because at that point in time, we were supposed to be in and moving towards a different kind of unification. And that's when Saturn was in Sagittarius, and we're at the final degrees in Saturn and Sagittarius now. Where do we go?
I lost you for a second. There you are.
Yep.
Yep. That's because you had something really good to say. Always.
Gremlins.
Yep. That's the gremlins in the wires.
So look, I think you connected into something. I think you had an organic experience. And what you experienced was this wave of what would then basically morph and manifest into what happens in 1990 and 1991 with Bush and the New World Order and everything that's unfolded since then, really.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting how we talk about 9/11, because me being on the Hudson River here, even Henry Hudson founded Manhattan basically on 9/11, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so many events on 9/11, and that's one of the fascinating ones. You know, that he actually, you know, was cruising around, and you know, he sees Manhattan. So yeah, I mean, New York is founded on 9/11. Utterly fascinating. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And this Saturn and Capricorn and 2020, let's talk about this for a little bit.
Yeah, boy, that's a big one. So I pulled up the chart for that. Let me see if I can just grab that. I believe it's happening in let me get there.
Is it December 2020?
Probably. It is, yeah. Well, no, it's at 22 degrees and 20 degrees, and it is in, I believe it's January, if I'm not mistaken, of 2020. Yeah. So Saturn goes into Capricorn at 22 on January 7th, which is an interesting day, January 7th. It was January 7th in 1899 that Tesla shut down his laboratory in Colorado in the Rockies, which is kind of, that's kind of interesting, right? January 7th, David Bowie's born January 8th. So on January 7th in 2020, Saturn is at 22 Capricorn and Pluto's at 22 Capricorn. So this is a pretty significant conjunction as far as I'm concerned. And then if we go out even further, if we get into February, Mars gets into Capricorn as well. So of Mars, Saturn, and Pluto and Capricorn. So, I mean, things are going to change. I mean, at that time, we're, 4 degrees off of Pluto and Capricorn inside the U.S. chart. Because at 26 degrees Capricorn, that's when the United States, again, on July 4th, 1776, that's where Pluto was in the chart. It was at 26 Capricorn. So the United States is going to go through its Pluto return before 2024 when Pluto officially all the way gets into Aquarius. I mean, we're going to be living in a very different place.
Yeah, that's what I feel. I feel by 2025 it's going to be a whole new world.
It's going to be very different.
Yeah.
And I think we'll have some things that'll be really interesting, and there'll be some empowering elements to it, but it's not going to be like America or the United States that we knew, and the planet's not going to be the same way. I mean, we're in uncharted territory. We're off the map now. I mean, we went off the map on, 12/21/12. I mean, we left the grid then. We left the reservation.
I agree.
On 12th. And nobody really, I mean, everybody was waiting for this big thing to happen. But the thing that happened was, is that was the sign off.
Yep.
That was it. Yeah.
Yep. I agree 100%.
And if you look at, like, for instance, look at the things that we've depended upon to be the metronome for our physical experience here. One of the things that we count on is what? Sports.
Yeah.
And, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and particularly football. Every fall, it starts up. We have training camp in the summer. We have football in the fall. And then we have the Super Bowl, the culmination in February. And this is the clockwork of, in some ways, the American psyche. You look at what's happened over the last 2 years with football. I mean, it has become an auger of huge social change.
Yeah,
whether you agree with it or not. I mean, we're watching the country and the culture becoming deconstructed before our very eyes with this sport. And it's fascinating to watch. And not only that, but from a supernatural perspective, and I think you might be able to chime in on this, I'm seeing things with football I've never seen before. I'm seeing levels of aggression. I'm seeing levels of violence. I'm seeing levels of speed I have never seen before. And I don't think it has to do with the training and the sort of amplification of the athlete. I think there's something else going on.
Yeah.
And in fact, I don't know if you saw this, but there's a guy by the name of Zay Jones who plays for the Buffalo Bills.
Oh.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, he went to catch a pass in the end zone, and he dropped it. So and he fell onto his chest, and when he gets up, I mean clearly it's kind of a Michael Jackson hip hop move, but it almost appears as if he's defying gravity. It's like they're playing the videotape backwards. This is how he gets up.
Wow.
There's something unusual happening now in pro football that it almost feels like there's this supernatural insertion that's taken place. Have you noticed anything like that?
Not with football, but there's things taking place all over the world like this, because the world is run by magic, Robert. I mean, yep. People, if you want to call it a technology or an astral technology or whatever, this whole grid that we're in is run by ancient symbols, geometries, incantations, and spells, if you want to call them. And I think that's what's happening here, is that there's an infectious virus that's spreading among the people, and it's not just with abilities, but it's also with rage and real brute force that's happening, and it's intense. And you could see it in martial arts and MMA as well, with some of the level of these people that I've witnessed. And I've been a martial artist my whole life, but if you take the last 10 years and you look back at martial artists 10 years ago, and then you look at them now, they've evolved like you wouldn't believe, the amount of skill and trauma they can really inflict on somebody in a short amount of time. And there's people jumping off cages, doing kicks, doing all this type of stuff that you wouldn't have dreamt that we ever would have saw in a MMA fight a few years ago. Now people are accomplishing. So, yeah, I can relate to some of that. And I'm seeing it in some of the children as well, and some of their abilities and their recalling past lives and different things that they're recalling. So there's something happening.
Well, clearly I think the veils are getting much thinner. And that goes sort of across the board, whether it's being able to tap into sort of this multidimensional pool of resources that we have at our disposal, or whether it's the unveiling of what's behind the curtain and, you know, what's taking place in people's private lives, which may or may not be, all that savory or unsavory. It depends.
And I think it's the technology and the artificial intelligence that's interweaving with us too. That's helping this happen. It's part of this technology. And it's part of what's taking place. If you think about it, think about the holographic universe, the Akashic. It's all the knowledge of everything recorded in this holographic universe, right? And then now we have, at the touch of our finger, access to this holographic universe when we use our iPhones, right? We have all the knowledge, all the lies, all the truth, everything that's ever been thought, said, or done, right at the touch of our fingers. So how did they pull this holographic universe now into this physical dimension so we can just access it with the touch of our finger? I mean, that, you know, there's something to that.
Yeah, you know, they talk about this process of deep learning for AI. And if people aren't aware of this, deep learning is when, before, what they would do with AI is they'd create a script. And then the AI would follow a script and do kind of functional computational learning. You tell it what to do and it does it, right? And then what they figured out was, well, what if we flood the AI with not just the script, but all these affiliated kinds of streams of information? So, for instance, if the AI was supposed to do medical billing, why not flood it with videos and recordings about the history of economy or money, right? So now all of a sudden, AI is getting all this peripheral learning. So what they've found out is now they've got these AIs that when they turn them on and start doing things, they're able to do things that they couldn't predict, right? So there's this whole deep learning process. Well, we've been in our own deep learning process, and it's through the amalgamation of the internet and the atom smashing capabilities of group consciousness, where, and we can't really graph this or chart this, but my sense is that, you know, as a species, we are deeply involved in deep learning, and we're morphing and we're mutating. And it is, for me on that level, that's truly exciting, because we're evolving in ways that are scaring the shit out of the people that want to control the game. And that to me is really that's the sweet spot. That's the place to be. And we don't always know and understand, because we don't have those kind of biofeedback or those feedback nodes, but sometimes we do. And when we do, we get it. We understand that we're evolving in a way that is incredibly complex and incredibly novel and really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's no telling what can happen, but it's scary if a machine can become sentient, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, I'm not sure if it'll be – I mean, who knows? You know, my theory is that CERN is probably this master quantum computer. I mean, that's what I really think CERN is. And that they switch something on with CERN.
And they're sort of like blending timelines or realities or some kind of something going on.
Yeah, well, I think CERN has become animate. And my gut feeling is that, you know, the people at the top of the pyramid or the planetary food chain, you know, the half of the 1%, I think they're basically communing with a super quantum computer. That's my sense. And I feel like this is where sort of the top-down orders, the top-down sort of blueprint of the planet is coming from.
Yeah, and they have a network of these colliders or these Hadron colliders, Robert. I mean, we even have one here in New York at Brookhaven Labs. I know that.
Yep. Yeah. No, they've had one in Stanford. The linear accelerator at Stanford has been there since the 1960s. This is what we're told and believe it's the mothership of all the Hadron colliders. And quite likely it is, but that's my sense. I mean, I feel like that there is probably some level of quantum computing and this sort of transference of sentient AI. But at the same time, you know, we're moving into a level of group consciousness that I think is really exciting and dynamic. And, you know, and how it shows up is through shows like this and YouTube and the internet. I mean, I've been following YouTube and the internet since it really came online, and I can just look at the graph, and it is up and to the right, in terms of people's consciousness and awareness. It was not like this, you know, 15 years ago. It just wasn't like it at all.
Well, Robert, we definitely got to have you back on, and we're definitely going to be talking tomorrow night on my other show, Eye of Ra, on TFR Live. But everybody, you can find Robert Phoenix at robertphoenix.com. And we'll be back tomorrow night with Robert Phoenix, but we got to have you back on Spiral Radio again. It's been a really good time, Robert, and I thank you for coming on.
Hey, thanks, Rob. Really great time being here. Love what you're doing.
Thank you, buddy. I want to thank my producer, Sarge, of course, Robert, everybody in the chat room, Power X Radio Network, and we'll see you next week. Spiral out.
to hold you in.